We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have like a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Feel like Kobe in the fourth quarter.
This is the Dane Moore NBA podcast brought to you by Blue Wire Podcasts. After a slight rain delay, I am joined by Britt Robson Sunday afternoon rather than Sunday morning. Britt, you wrote a big old column on Chris Finch. It came out on Friday, but now we are 30 games into the Chris Finch era. The Timberwolves,
yes.
After a win against the Jazz on Saturday night, are 10-20 under Chris Finch. They actually played 31 games under Ryan Saunders. They were 7-24 under Saunders. It's this whole weird dichotomy where it feels extremely different. The results don't, last night withstanding, don't look that different. You really laid it all out there. How much are you feeling that this is similar versus different? Where's your head on it, and does the last night's win against the Jazz shift anything?
Last night's win against the Jazz doesn't shift anything, because any team, you know, let's see them win two in a row under Chris Finch,
right?
You know, and then, you know, maybe we'll think about it.
If they win two in a row against the Jazz? What if that's what happens?
Well, actually, they have.
No, I mean, but if they win on Monday, that is true.
Oh, I see. If they win Monday, right.
Well, that'll be even crazier.
If they win three in a row against the Jets.
My God.
Here's what I would say, notwithstanding that. I think the biggest difference, as I pointed out in the piece, isn't so much wins and losses and X's and O's. I think the difference is kind of like the team growth or spiritual equivalent of paying a mortgage rather than paying rent. I think that Saunders was always a short-term transitionary thing, and you don't take care of your house or your living quarters as well when you're paying rent as when you're paying mortgage.
Fair.
And Finch is the mortgage, Saunders was the rent, and Gerson Rosas wanted it that way because he wanted total control, I think, until total control got him in a very bad place.
Well, he is the landlord.
And then he wanted somebody who was a handyman, Chris Finch. Lonzo, kill this analogy.
Yeah, let's see how far we can go with it.
But so anyway, I think that Finch is the more permanent option. The players know that. I mean, the players aren't stupid. We could kind of figure out. You said when I said to you, Saunders won't be here at the end of next year. You know, I mean, that was optimistic that he would last 3 years. Whereas Finch, if Finch is gone at the end of 2.5, 3 years,
so
it's going to be somewhat of, yeah. It's going to be somewhat of an upset. Right. Exactly. So I think that the permanence, I think that it's almost like the equivalent of, all right, it's time to get serious about this rebuild. It's time to dig in now. Because we don't, we've screwed around on playtime, and playtime has begun to really hurt our chances to play much longer and also to build something meaningful. And so that to me is the biggest difference, is that no disrespect to Ryan Saunders, who I've always said I think is a better coach than a lot of people think he is, but the very reasons why he got the job, which was that he's an exceedingly generous and nice person who can therefore relate to players on a pretty extraordinary level, also is the type of thing that's going to hold him back when it comes time to putting the hammer down, saying who plays who in crunch time minutes, and also, quite frankly, in dealing with Rosas. Rosas knew what kind of a guy Ryan was, and Rosas also knew who held the balance of power in that relationship. And now that's I would argue that Finch arguably has close to as much power as Rosas does. Maybe even arguably more, since he didn't engineer some of the things that, as of now anyway, look like mistakes.
Well, and they can go back and forth. Of if they wanted to go with a power battle, they could. And right. And I would be inclined to point to, the notion that if, Finch has more power because, Rosas can't really do anything about Finch, right? Like, he can't threaten the card of firing him because Rosas doesn't have another bullet in the chamber to fire.
He expended a lot of things to get that, mid-season hire, raiding the Raptors organization, right?
Yeah, that's gone. So the... But this is now, if we're setting up for what a power struggle could be, now Rosas could start, if he just for some reason, for example, wanted Jarrett Culver to be playing 30 minutes a night, he could trade he could get rid of all the other wings on the roster and stuff. I mean, that's hyperbolic, but we have seen examples of that in the past. Like, the hope is that this is going to be more synergistic, but less of just the overarching hand of Rosas. I think Rosas started to really enjoy the power, and that the power is too much. And in ways, like, tell me if you agree with this. Like, we all, it's widely regarded across the league now that it's bad if the coach and president are one and the same, right? It's why Tibbs was fired. It's why Stan Van, everyone. You don't see that anymore.
Some very good people lost their jobs because they couldn't do both.
And obviously, Rosas wasn't actually the coach, but he kind of was both. Like, he had so much power, so many strings that seemed connected to Ryan Saunders, that even if Gerson Rosas was a very smart executive, which you and I believe he was, he might have been inhibiting himself in ways by taking on, holding too many strings. If it's true that guys can't do all that, I mean.
And even more than that, he unintentionally undermined Ryan's authority on the sidelines. I mean, if the players probably knew, if somebody really had a problem with Ryan and they were powerful enough, they could perhaps have their agent go right to Rosas. And I'm not sure Ryan had the cachet and the internal clout, short of Cat. I think Cat is probably the only person that could have basically intervened in the thing and said, hey, back off and let this guy coach. Or, not even that so much as it is the perception. let the perception be, at the very least, that what this guy wants to do is what will happen. For example, you and I both kind of knew that Ryan was intrigued with McDaniels much earlier than what happened. I think he wanted McDaniels in the starting lineup earlier. It sort of seemed, you know, when
he did, man. I mean, that's
it was kind of like, you know, it's kind of like the when somebody is yelling help in sign language because they're being held hostage. These little pressers we'd have, we'd talk about McDaniels, and he'd say, "Yeah, you know," I'd say, "Are you going to be?" There was one question I asked him: "How long is it going to be before you have to start McDaniels in the starting line?" He goes, "Yeah, that's a good question." You know, I mean, it's like, and you're only the coach, you know. So I mean, maybe you could do it if you wanted to.
If you wanted to. Okay, so let's go to this. We're acknowledging all these differences between Saunders and Finch, and and you know, if I'm being honest, and particularly if the Utah game went to happen last night, which was I went into big time last night. It was, and we'll talk about it. It was good across the board. As impressive an event performance this year as the Wolves have had all year. Like, credit to that. But I was expecting a loss, and I was expecting to have this conversation with you as I'm reading your column, going through it, to say that, man, I see a lot of similarities in result between what Chris Finch was doing and what Ryan Saunders was doing. If we just look at the numbers wise, and now Finch got his 10th win, but 10-20 for Finch, 7-24 for Saunders. Those aren't drastically different. Ryan only had 11 games of Carl Anthony Towns. Finch had 20, has had 28
and
games.
Only two with Towns and D'Lo.
Exactly. And we've had nine of,
right.
Oh no, 11.
Nine. I think it is nine. Well, actually seven because Towns missed two games.
Exactly. Of them. So Finch has gotten more. And then if you just go down to how the offense ranks and the defense ranks, it's basically the same too. I mean, under Finch, they're 17th in offense and dead last in defense. And under Ryan, they were 28th in offense and 24th in defense. So, yes, they've ticked up under Finch offensively some, but the defense has got demonstrably worse.
The net rating is slightly worse, probably even after Utah, which was a very impressive win, but it was only a five-point win.
Minus eight under Ryan, minus 7.1 under Finch. So,
oh, that's what they have the net rating as there? That's non-crunch time, right?
That's cleaning the glass. I mean, but functionally, you know, the same, a little bit better under Finch.
Right. And you include garbage time, and Ryan's net rating is actually better.
Is that so?
Yeah.
Oh.
I think that's so. 6-7.
Either way,
they're
50 anyway, cents one way, half a dollar. They're terrible, both of them. Those are both terrible ratings.
Like, 5.8. points per 100 possessions worse on defense and 5.1 better on offense for Finch. So, but what it comes down to again is Finch is able to put some things in place. If Ryan had tried to use large lineups or tried to basically tell Anthony Edwards or D'Angelo Russell, you're not playing the fourth quarter tonight because of what I've seen thus far, not only from you, but from guys who are out there now playing better. I just think that what I see, the difference, the biggest difference, again, remains somebody can do what they want almost 100%, and somebody could do what they want probably about 55 to 60%, with that 40% being – perhaps the most controversial and thus creative ideas.
Right.
A coach needs to find out if his creative ideas are bullshit or perhaps there's something there. And I think in many respects that is, you know, we're all guessing here. I don't have, you know, Ryan Saunders isn't talking to me behind the scenes or anything, or Rosa certainly isn't. So, I mean, it's essentially what I gather from watching the games and, you know, what we saw in the like help videos of the Zoom calls from Ryan. I do think that he doesn't have the same freedom. Didn't have the same freedom. Finch does. Finch is a very smart guy. When I hear Finch talk about things, I could hear him talk, you know, long time. He really does. I like the way he flows offense into defense and vice versa and gives you thumbnails on players. There's certain ways he does things. Obviously, he leaves some things out. He leaves out the negative stuff when he's talking about players. But he does give you really good, you know,
insight
into that. I thought last night what was really revealing to me, for example, and Kat kind of threw cold water on this, but I still don't believe it. If they were running a drop-back scheme, they would not have been able to play nearly the same kind of defense.
Well, let's tee this up here. So, yeah, that was wrong. So Britt asks Carl last night about whether or not this adjusted way that the Timberwolves are playing defense has, one, improved them, and two, whether or not it's sustainable, right? That was your question?
Right. Well, what I said was the kind of play we saw tonight against Utah, mm-hmm. where they were backfilling for you. Okogie just got through telling us.
One of the things that was
triggering everything is we were backfilling on the pick and roll, mm-hmm. and that got every, and we had practiced the entire time knowing Gobert likes to roll. So whenever Gobert rolls, somebody's got to be there for him on the roll. So they were. McDaniels was, Okogie was. You know, they were there for him. And what was the best part of it was that the other players knew. So they had some advance notice on their rotations, which I think was crucial. But sure. They started to fill in other people's gaps.
Yeah, it's your classic scramble out and switch X out. That's the term you'll hear coaches say
exactly,
all the time.
Exactly.
It is so Toronto. That is the Toronto Raptors. To a T, that is the defensive style the Timberwolves have put in under Chris Finch. And at times, it looks really good. In the aggregate, it's bad. The numbers are worse than solid is enough and all that. And what Britt, you asked to Carl was, you know, is this better? And what Kat said is no, we need to also have the solid is enough there. And you know, maybe there's some truth to that, but I think that's a classic example of Carl not wanting to indict himself for not being a great drop center. Because what we're learning, and I mean, if you talk to coaches around, you talk to people who right. know what they're watching, is for years, Kat is passable in a drop when engaged. He can be fine there, right. but he's right. not 7'2 like Embiid. He just isn't the physical.
Jordan Erkic, right.
Yeah,
right.
He just isn't the physical presence in that way. But on the counter side of it, what we've learned about Kat, and wildly positive, is his ability to guard on the wing. He is able to play this X out scheme. He is able to switch pick and rolls. You can have him guard. I mean, I thought in the Kings series, it was crazy, man. Like, you have the Wolves playing Kat and Naz out there together. Mo Harkless is guarding Naz Reid. The Kings are going tiny, small ball, and Kat is guarding DeLon Wright. That is his matchup, his primary matchup. DeLon Wright, like, came into the league as a point guard. Like, they have completely switched, and it's helping Carl. He's better at this. He's better at a mixture of it. But I think,
and he likes it. It fits his self image better. But until you ask him a question that, you know,
that it might indict him. It indicts him.
See, and I thought, let me just, yeah, you know, what's okay. crazy about this is that I thought he would be pleased by it because it means he gets to be out on the perimeter. I thought he thought, you know, it would be, hey, Carl, I'll tee one up for you. And he's going, well, we do, you know, and what he did is he played his maturity card, you know, which is a cool card he can play for the first time in his career this year. But
yeah, anyway. Legitimately he can.
He's
a hard one to get honest X's and O's answers from because he will stray away from agreeing with anything that doesn't line up with results. And all, I mean, it's,
and also, I think that
he's not very honest in that way.
He doesn't want to answer the question posed to him. He wants to figure out the prism by which that question gets put in
right.
and what kind of gamma rays come out the other end. And he wants to basically figure out the best
answer
lighting on those.
I know. That's why it just is all, we can't take X's and O's stuff away from that. If he wants to do that, that's his prerogative. He's going to do it. I don't even want this to be a bag on Carl thing because I think Carl's been good. And defensively, he's been good. Right. I have loved, I mean, I was going through last night.
But it was a disingenuous answer. And Well, also, what's cool about it is
I'm pissed we gave it air. I actually am. Because
I'm glad we gave it air because it's something that people are wondering. You know, Finch is, you know,
people are wondering what they think. If it's not what he thinks, then it's not. Some people are probably like this conversation.
They're one of those, Chris Finch, where's the defense? Yeah. You know, we're at 118. Well, here was the defense. And the defense happened because there was a way to defend Rudy Gobert that wasn't a drop-back scheme that energized the entire team. So whether it will work all the time, and clearly it doesn't.
And that's what I'm saying. That's the truth. Like, that's the truth. Right. That's the fact of the matter. Once you put Carl's input into that, it just muddies the waters of confusion.
Right.
The results are we can all watch basketball good enough to understand that if the Wolves would have continued defending the way they did in the first quarter, I mean, what were the first two shots of the game? The first two shots of the game was Gobert sets a screen for Ingles. Cat is back at like 14 feet. Ingles, who's shooting 49.4% from three, just gets Okogie gets pinned on the Gobert screen because Gobert's an elite screener, and Ingles pulls up for a wide open shot. Like, that's what happened in the whole first quarter. They scored 40 points. It's because that's how they defended it. It's a terrible way.
15 from three.
It's a terrible way to guard the Utah Jazz. It makes no sense. That was a terrible move by Finch to start off that way. Now, it was a very good adjustment, and the results matched up with it. They scored 56 points in the next three quarters. But that has been the problem with that scheme all along, is that it only works situationally. And you can't make it your bread and butter unless Cat is Embiid or Gobert or whatever. And he's just not. He's not defensively those type of players. So this is the new style.
And
this is the new
style. It also freed up Edwards, and even D'Lo played good defense the other. And they all played good defense the last three quarters of the game. Jordan McLaughlin was filching things left and right in his 5 minutes. I mean,
but are we ready to crown this? That's what I'm talking
about. Of course
not.
Well, I mean, again, are we ready to say anything is a sure thing on this team? Karl Anthony Towns is a marvelous offensive player. Mm-hmm. Jaden McDaniels is a burgeoning glue guy, one of those guys that every really quality team has, the starter that people don't really know, that don't follow the team, but is incredibly important. It's Royce O'Neal on the Jazz. You know, it's that guy. You know, Gary Harris for a long time in Denver was that guy. We have a guy like that now. And I think that's something you can kind of take to the bank. He's had some ups and downs, but everybody does. Cat's offense, I think you can take to the bank.
Can I pause you on McDaniels for a second?
Sure.
Because I think this is like, your computer wasn't working, so we stopped for a while today. And I went to the grocery store, and then I came back, and I'm like, well, all right, I'm just going to start.
His defensive rating is horrible.
I found my way into a rabbit hole. And yes, there's that. But one thing that you and I have talked about before this season, specifically to the Cat and Covington pairing, was that we both loved Rocco as an individual defender. But we came to the conclusion that Rocco at the four next to Cat at the five just was not a good utilization of those resources. And it checked out in the numbers. The player Cat played with the most last year, the most minutes of anyone on the team, was Robert Covington. And it was Cat's worst defensive rating on the team.
Right.
And we kind of took that to the bank to some degree.
Yeah. Bruising power forward, we always said, or your position, a center, would be the answer. And I do think he needs a guy who's very physical.
Okay. So.
And that's not McDaniels.
And Cat has played 650 minutes with McDaniels this year, which is up there. That's his third most of anyone on the team. It's not a small sample. Yep. And far and away, Cat's worst two-man pairing defensively this season is him and McDaniels, just as it was with Covington. And I don't want to be hypocritical here and say I believe the Covington numbers and I don't believe the McDaniels numbers. The McDaniels numbers don't meet my eye test, but I've blabbered about that Covington and Cat pairing.
Well, the
not
Covington
working
numbers
forever.
Didn't meet my eye test, but the fact of the matter is that they do perform in very similar fashion, mm-hmm. In terms of the fact they have great hands, that they don't play to block shots a lot. I mean, almost all of McDaniel's shot blocks are weak side blocks, or basically following along.
They're more like aggressive contests.
Exactly. And so I don't have any problem saying that that is something that has to be worked out. I would also argue that to me, the best number to determine whether defense works or doesn't work with a group is three. Because if two people do something right and that one guy in the play doesn't do something right, that can really screw with the two people who did do something right. If three people do something right, most of the time the offense has to go in another direction. They have to go attack the defense elsewhere on the court. And so I like the triple numbers sometimes of people. Not that it would necessarily, you know, I don't know if it would make a difference, because the problem is the Wolves don't have a lot of great other defenders.
Well, that's what I was going to say is...
Okogie, McDaniels, and Cat, what's that look like?
Okogie, McDaniels... 112.6 since Finch took over, which is, you know, that's basically
so
all
when
the time.
So when you have like a three guys on the court at the same time, you know, arguably those guys can really get after it together, you know. Mm-hmm. Then again, I would say, I'll actually come right out and say, I think those are the three best defenders on the team right now.
Oh, yeah.
So if you have your three best defenders, if you have your three best defenders on the team and your rating is 112.6, you still have a lot of problems.
Right, but it's all relative here because
the
most used like ones...
117 or...
Yeah, Towns, McDaniels, Edwards is 120.8. Towns, McDaniels, Rubio is 119.7. You know, those are the most used. So I guess the thing that I've been flip-flopping on, and I admitted to it on the pod last night, was like after that Sacramento win... I say win in air quotes here.
Right. Like the Houston win.
Yeah, exactly. Right. You know, I kind of felt bad about it because it's only like the 15th post-game podcast I've been able to do the whole year of a win. But honestly, my feeling of it was gross. Like that, I don't see value, particularly at this juncture of the season, in the Wolves winning a game the way they won it against the Kings like that, where it didn't really, you know, it didn't feel like you were building any sort of habits that will connect to the future. The defense was atrocious. And so the thing I've been flipping back and forth on, and what I said then is I was like, man, this isn't like, even though Okogie, McDaniels, and Cat all do look like above average defenders, this whole theory of trying to balance the scale with, you have your terrible defensive guys, but if we throw a couple of Okogie and McDaniels out there, it's going to balance it out. I'm like, no, it isn't working. It isn't balancing the scales out. And I do think that's still true. But why I flip-flop is, you know, we saw three quarters of it last night where you go, all right, I do kind of see the outline. Like, if Okogie
is... But again, what you have is you have the two guys who pretty much have their variation, their play off the play, you know, being rotation guys. The thing about rotations is you usually have to recognize them. You have to see, it's like Gogi Jang always used to say, yeah, the X's and O's are great on paper. When they're on the court, they're not really X's and O's. They're just people moving around, yeah, you know? Right. And so, but if you're saying backfill on a Gobert roll, that means that guy's open, you got to go to him. That means that guy's open, you got to go to him. Everybody's got to switch down or whatever. If you know the play is coming because you see Gobert rolling, that's why all five guys played good defense, because they knew what to do on a string countering a team's offensive move. How often has that happened this year? Very, very rarely. Have you seen the Wolves defense react en masse properly to a wrinkle that gets thrown at them by the other team?
Right.
And I also will say that Utah did miss a lot of makeable threes in the second half. And if they had hit those,
yeah, they lose.
I'm not sure the rotation would have happened as aggressively as it did. Once they started to go pick and roll with Gobert, part of that was because they were missing on threes. If they were making those threes, both Utah would have stayed with the threes a little bit more, and the Wolves would have been staying home a little bit more.
They would have lost faith in the string of the holding on to the string.
Probably, exactly. So it's always, the thing about judging defense is it's so, it is one of the places where I do trust my eye test. I trust my eye test on defense more than I trust my eye test on offense, because the offensive numbers are more accurate than the defensive numbers, in my view, Who knows? I could be wrong, too.
No, it's...
What a thought.
It is interesting, though. Utah is a fascinating one to go against, because, as Okogie said last night after the game, he's like, when you play Utah, you know they are going to run more pick and roll than any other team any other night. So you can kind of focus on your basic defensive theory. You go into every possession as a defender. If you're Josh, you're running down back on defense and you're thinking, I just need to contain the point of attack right now. If you're Jaden McDaniels, you're going, I need to be intentional. I know Gobert's going to hit that screen and he's going to roll. I have to come in and tag. Cat, if you're dropping whatever Cat's coverage is in that situation. You know that when it's more than 50% of the time that's going to happen, it's easier. And this is kind of a Jazz thing too, of like why I think they might be a little susceptible in the playoffs.
Right. That's what I thought actually.
Is predictability in that sort of way. But I thought it was
interesting. And also they do kind of live and die on their threes.
Sure.
I mean, all of a sudden, I
want to go to the Jazz in a second. Like, big picture about what they're like as a contender.
I'll try to stop interrupting.
No. I just thought it was really interesting how you saw Josh commit to what his job was. You saw Cat commit to his job was. I thought McDaniels was terrific in the tag on Gobert. Like, and what that is like, and I don't know. I mean, I don't mean to talk down to people who don't understand this or do understand this, but like, tagging a role man is an extremely important part of pick and roll defense. And it's something that really sucks to do when you don't weigh 200 pounds or you're shorter than 6'5", because you are basically being tasked with running in and hitting a 7 foot tall, 280 pound guy so as to get in the way of their path to the rim. And what we see happen time and again in tag situations, when it's Anthony Edwards or D'Angelo Russell, is they kind of just...
See you later. They're missing an action.
Well, they literally just tag like they're playing tag, and they touch his hip, They pet the jersey. What you need to do is, you hear coaches say you need to hit and go. And that's why the Wolves will forever be bad at defense until D'Angelo Russell and Anthony Edwards up their physicality defensively. If they're going to be 35-minute a night guys, because that's going to be part of it. Preventing offensive rebounds is going to be part of it too. And McDaniels has that, even though he weighs less than all those guys by far. It's a critical part to this whole thing that is pick and roll defense, which is the most defining thing in NBA defense.
It's the most important part of defense right now, especially if you don't have a rim protector.
And Anthony Edwards never does it. I thought it was interesting. He talked about last night, he was joking around about being a football player, and he said if he was a football player, he'd be like Cam Chancellor, but he wouldn't be as hard of a hitter. And I'm like, yeah.
If I knew who Cam Chancellor was, it would have been a great analogy.
I mean, he's just like a strong safety. He's like a knock your head off safety, hit you. And what we've seen with Edwards this year is he doesn't like physical contact, particularly on the defensive end. And on the offensive end, he's starting to embrace it a little bit more. His preferred lane to take, though, is just dunk over you or shoot over you,
And also, he does have some great Eurostep switch hand bank, I mean, which, again, is somewhat conflict avoidance. I would say that Ant welcomes contact much more on offense because he knows he'll get to the line and he'll get points.
He sees reward in it. That's the thing.
He gets paid.
He doesn't see reward. He doesn't see reward in tagging the role man. He doesn't see reward in boxing out.
Somewhat, that is a rookie. That's a rookie talking. I mean, I do think, or a rookie playing. Mm-hmm. Once Finch knows this. I mean, this is actually a good thing, I think. I think Ryan knew it too, but I think, again, Finch gets to reinvigorate Okogie, tell Okogie, hey, I need you to hit threes. I need you to give me something on offense so that I can play you on defense. If I can't get that, you're going to have to sit. And that's different than saying to somebody, you know, you could shoot. You should shoot when you're open. It's saying, I need something out of you on offense. And Okogie, I think his shot selection has been better. He does put the ball on the deck more. He does shoot wide open threes. I don't think his last 15 games is necessarily sustainable. I think that's the best Okogie will see offensively. I mean, but I think
– how about as a screener last night?
I know. He there's a guy who likes contact, mm-hmm. you know.
That's what he needs to spend his off season doing. Like,
is
learning how to screen.
More like PJ Tucker.
I would say like Bruce Brown on the Nets, but they have.
Bruce Brown is a mean dude.
And so's Josh.
Yeah. No, but I mean, Bruce Brown, I think, wants to fight you sometimes.
I think Josh has a little bit of a crazy streak in him.
He could be.
He's got some Marcus Smart into him. Maybe Bruce Brown might be legitimately crazy.
Marcus Smart. Now you're talking, you know.
I don't know.
He's one of my favorite guys.
It is interesting, you know, big picture where Josh sort of fits in this. Because it's obviously not as a starter as he's been. I mean, he started a crazy amount of games this year and still is starting every night.
If you can get him part of, if he becomes a skeleton key on some bad defenders, which is what you just got through seriously doubting, and I don't blame you. But what I'm saying is if Finch has a camp, a whole camp, and he figures out a defense that utilizes Okogie's toughness and flexibility and convinces, you know, I personally, you know, here again, I think Ann has a better shot at becoming an NBA defender than D'Lo just simply because he's younger and he professes to like contact and he handles contact.
How would you grade them right now as defenders, D'Lo versus Ann?
I would say D'Lo a D and Ann a C-.
See, I'd flip it.
See, look at the numbers, man. I know I just got through saying the numbers don't
tell numbers? You anything. Like
the
I'm
numbers
actually
on D'Lo. The numbers on D'Lo. D'Lo, if it wasn't for Wancho, D'Lo would be numerically the worst player on the team defensively. You know, now Malik's hurt. Malik, Wancho, and D'Lo are basically pump the defensive rating is like a helium balloon when they're in the game.
See, mine is less about is less about the numbers in this situation. In that, I think D'Angelo gives up. In situations where he could,
especially corner threes,
a lot of different times, or when he is in a situation where he feels like he has become the underdog, someone's driving at him, he's gonna ole and he's gonna pull out. If he thinks the guy's caught it in an open catch and shoot situation, he's not gonna attack out on the closeout. Right. But I think if you put him in situations that he thinks he can compete in,
have an impact,
where he thinks like his athleticism or his size or his whatever isn't outmatched in that spot, in that specific instance, I don't think D'Angelo's a stupid defender. I think he's smart. And I think in terms of defensive basketball IQ, I think it is incomparable, him versus Ant. And
which is even more damning, let's point out.
Sure, yeah, to Ant. And
No, to D'Lo. If sure. The basketball IQ of mm-hmm. D'Lo, if he knows what to do and doesn't do it,
I just think it's
that's worse than somebody not knowing what to do.
I think the defensive rating numbers on D'Lo are in part so bad because he gives up. Whether it be on some
Kevin
of those
Love.
Positions, yeah, sure. Or he gives up when they're down by 20 points. But I do think there is a player in there who when he is ready to compete. Now, this doesn't sound great, but I think we've seen, and I've gone back and watched, like, because this is, for me at least, it's harder to pick up in live. I need to go back and watch. I think D'Angelo's played some solid defense here. And Ant has made a lot of steals. And those are different things, because I think with Ant, his pursuit of steals and the gambling that Finch is enabling him to do is providing a certain type of value but it isn't a long-term sustainable one. And I think it ultimately leads me to make my grade him a D and D'Lo a C minus. I think it's kind of fake.
That's, I will agree with you to the extent about D'Lo anyway. I will agree with you that where I find D'Lo really good is when his man takes him into the paint and all of a sudden there's like four players or even five players from the two different teams all kind of clustered together. Mm-hmm. D'Lo digs for that. D'Lo, his hands are very active when that happens.
That Jimmy Butler block last year.
Yeah, that's true.
It's kind of like that, right?
But I'm also even thinking about when the ball's on the deck mm-hmm. and it's not, when nobody's really sure whose it is, even if D'Lo doesn't come away with the ball, he finds a way to keep the ball in play. You know, so if somebody's trying to pick up the ball, D'Lo will knock it out of their hands, right. You know? And what I also will say is that D'Lo is deceptively long. It's why he gets off shots in traffic. It's like his hands or his arms are much bigger than you think they should be.
Yeah.
I mean, he shoots these, part of it is his angle, shot angle, of course. But also, when he stops and pops, it's kind of like what Jeff Teague wants to do sometimes, only Jeff Teague turns out to basically want to get the foul because he can't get the shot off. Of getting in traffic with people and then trying to go up. What D'Lo does is he herky-jerky movements, ta-da, 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 gets people going, has people off balance, and then shoots over them, even though they're right next to him, because his arms are so long. Well, that length on defense occasionally can be used really well to fill passing lanes, and occasionally can be used really well to do the Covington sweep steal on penetration near him. You know, like if somebody is going by him and it's not his man, occasionally he'll be able to reach out and deter that to some extent. Those are two of the ways I see D'Lo being okay. Ant, I think, is totally still trying to figure out how to play defense. And I think that it will be interesting to see the more he learns how to play defense, how good he can be. I think what is surprising to me right now, there isn't an area of the game of basketball where Ant can't be above average. You know, I mean, fair. As a passer, as a rebounder, as a scorer, obviously, as a defender will probably be the final hurdle, and I would not even need above average. If Ant can be, Russell Westbrookian, you know, somebody who hurts you on defense but doesn't kill you on defense, you know, given all his offensive talent, if that comes to fruition, he'll be fine. But I agree that those are the two. If you're looking at Swiss cheese in a team's defense, you know,
it's there. Yeah.
That's where the mice are, you know.
I want to get back to Finch and Saunders real quick and more specifically about the identity, but let's take a quick break. I'm not sure about you, but I'm taking a rain check on spring cleaning this year. Freshening up for the season with comfort instead, with some sheets, with some towels, some loungewear, and more from Brooklinen. And with their birthday sale happening this weekend, Brooklinen is offering site-wide savings on all things comfort for their biggest sale of the year. Brooklinen was founded by husband and wife duo, Rich and Vicky, with the goal to create beautiful luxury home essentials at prices that don't break the bank. By working directly with manufacturers, they ensure premium, high-quality comfort every time and at a fraction of the retail price. That means ridiculously soft bedding, towels, and loungewear. Brooklinen is so confident you'll love everything, they will give you a 365-day warranty. They've even got 75,000 five-star reviews. It's hard to argue with that. Get everything you need for a fresh spring during Brooklinen's biggest sale of the year. Shop Brooklinen's birthday sale going on this weekend. And if you're listening to this podcast after the sale ends, don't worry. You can still go to brooklinen.com and use promo code MORE, my last name, to get $20 off any purchase of $100 or more. That's brooklinen.com and enter the promo code MORE to get $20 off any purchase of $100 or more. Brooklinen, everything you need to live your most comfortable life. So, Britt, back to the Saunders versus Finch thing here, and we can kind of put a bow on it with this, is this idea that I think we're both of the same mind, that the results have been largely the same, but there's much more of an identity, and we have a better idea of what the path is going forward exactly. under Finch, which
That's right.
you would say, right, that portends well to the idea that the Wolves can at least come out next year and be who they want to be. They can yes. they can go out and do that, whereas under Saunders it just felt a little bit more gray. What is that knowing what they want to be going to look like next season, if you know what I mean?
Yes. Well, first let me say that part of that was Ryan, part of that was injuries and COVID. And part of it was Rosas trying to cram a style.
Yeah.
You know, so I won't say it's all Ryan versus Finch. I will say
No, I'm just drawing the line of 31 games under Saunders, 30 under Finch.
No, I agree.
Yeah.
But I think to the extent that they can be who they want to be, what do they want to be next year? Finch has kind of indicated that he wants a lot of things to run through Cat, but he doesn't want Cat to be the top scorer on the team necessarily. I think that's a kind of a fascinating.
Or is that Cat? I don't think I agree with that. I think he does want Cat to be the top scorer. I'm not Do sure Cat does. I think
well,
I think Finch wants Cat to be Jokic, which is both of those things. Is,
oh yeah, yeah.
Is the elite distributor and the top scorer. I think that's what Cat. I think that's what Finch is.
Well, that's what I want too.
Yeah, I think that's what anyone would want. I think
I want to. Remember when we talked about this in spring training or preseason, whatever you want to call it, back in the day. I said, let's have Cat be a 30 to 35% usage guy. You know,
dude. I mean, and you and Jim Pete, like both. Whenever Cat takes like his little instead of going to his left shoulder hook, and he goes to the right shoulder fade. You and Jim Pete, I know, I see it happen, and I know Jim Pete's gonna say that's a bad shot, and I know I'm gonna see the Brit tweet come through on the timeline that shot sucks. But here's the thing, I'll take that over like 90% of the rest of the Timberwolves offense. I will. He's just Cat is that good of a shooter, and the rest of the players.
I bet his percentage on that shot is about 22%.
No, I bet it's higher than that, and I don't know how we could. Cat is too good offensively. I'm mostly making a point here that there's no reason we don't need to like shrink down the spectrum of the things that Cat can do. If anything, we should be extending it more so as to go through him more.
Okay, but ideally, I actually think what they would like is for Cat to be near triple double territory, Edwards to be the top scorer, D'Lo to be a really good fill-in third cog.
Maybe a couple of years from now when you can bake in a lot more efficiency from Ant, but I don't think Chris Finch... We're talking about next year. You think that's what... I think Chris Finch knows...
I think he wants to rush the process.
I think if Anthony Edwards is your leading scorer next year...
Problems?
You're not making the playoffs, yeah.
He's because, close to their leading scorer this year.
Yeah, they have the worst record of the league. Second worst record of the league. I mean, I don't know. I think you want I'll go back to the Denver thing. If it's me, I do Cat and D'Lo like you do Murray and Jokic, and Anthony Edwards is my Michael Porter Jr. And that is a bucket getter in a lower usage role. Anthony Edwards has done nothing in my eyes outside of for development purposes, sure. Give him a shitload of shots. Let him go do that. You're trying to win the game. What has Anthony Edwards done that suggests he should be taking more than 12 shots a game? Unless he's rolling. Like, watch the Nuggets, man. The Nuggets go to Porter at times and they lean into him more when he's rolling. I don't.
That sounds to me like what we should do with D'Lo. And I will tell you that the Murray D'Lo comparison is unfair to Murray.
That's fair. Murray's better than D'Lo. I agree.
And also he can just get you 50, you know, and he can get you 50.
I think D'Lo can get you 50, though, too.
D'Lo can get you 50 less often.
Sure, but he can still get you 50, though.
He can get you 50.
And maybe 50 is a little high. Let's call it like 40 for both of those guys.
Right. The day that D'Lo is able to do what Murray did to counter Donovan Mitchell in that Utah series or anything.
We're not talking about the playoffs yet. I'm not talking. Yeah, okay. You're right.
Murray is a star. D'Lo is a very good player in his role. And if he dedicated himself on defense, would flirt with being top 15 point guard.
I was thinking about this yesterday. I'm watching the Knicks, my new favorite team. And I'm thinking about the whole Julius.
Randall's having an amazing year, isn't he?
That's what I'm getting at. We would have never guessed this, right? From Julius.
I always liked him, but I did not think he was going to be like 30, 12, and 8 most nights.
I mean, so it's funny how we've seen from these Lakers guys, like Ingram did this last year. You know, they get out of there. Julius Randle.
Stan Van Gundy put him in a hole.
Yeah, right. Well, he's back. But now Julius Randle, you know, has done this too.
Right.
And I'm like, is there any chance we see that type of leap from D'Angelo Russell next year?
Yes, I think there is.
I'm glad you said yes to that. I agree. I agree. I really do.
I mean, without the 12, I mean, he could get 30 and 8 and maybe 5.
Yeah. The point guard version of that, where you're like, this guy's a killer on offense, which is what stands out with when you watch Randle, you go, I don't have answers for this. Like,
okay, but what I will say is if that's true, who's the second leading scorer on the Knicks? Okay, Barrett, you know, but Barrett is being held back, and Ant and Cat will be held back if D'Lo is Randle. And you just got through saying if Ant is the leading scorer, they're gonna be terrible. If D'Lo has a Randle like renaissance, I think that may be all the more reason for him not to play defense. And I
think that's part of the Randle like renaissance is more of a commitment to both ends. I think that's your dream situation next year. I think that's your dream situation next year is what the Nuggets were this year. Where Cat,
see, you are a dedicated D'Lo guy.
I'm not a dedicated D'Lo guy. I just like we're comparing him to Ant, man. You're comparing him to Ant. Like,
yes, I am.
Ant can get there. Ant is very far away from there, as in terms of consistency. I think that you could get consistency out of D'Lo more likely than you could get consistency out of Ant next year. Does that make sense?
Right now. Yeah, next year. That's true. But I don't think they're going to make the playoffs next year. I think they'll be lucky if they make the playoffs, even if everything goes well. Well, I mean, it depends on the pick, obviously.
Yeah.
If you can get somebody
I don't think we can't make playoff predictions.
I'm assuming no pick. Right.
Yeah, which is odds on that.
Right. All right. So let's say then I would say that I want to keep developing Anthony Edwards.
Sure.
To be.
Don't get me wrong. I want to develop him. I'm just saying, Michael, do you not think Michael Porter Jr. has developed in that role in Denver?
I don't like Michael Porter Jr.
Michael Porter Jr.
I think he's a great
Michael
shooter.
Porter Jr. is the best comp for Anthony Edwards in the NBA. That's just true right now.
I don't know about that.
Why? What's wrong with
the rim
it?
Nearly as because he's.
I'm talking
he's
about
a better outside shooter. He's a better outside shooter and not nearly as good at penetrating.
Okay, in terms of elite athlete, lost on defense, and someone you could see blossoming into a Russell Westbrook, that is what Michael Porter Jr. is, and that is what Anthony Edwards. They both are that. You're right. They have different games. You know,
I think Anthony Edwards has a higher ceiling than Michael Porter Jr. I actually think Michael Porter Jr.
You've been watching the Nuggets lately. Turn on a Nuggets game.
No, yeah, I saw the night he dropped 39. Actually, he looked very good.
He looked like a. Remember how Pokemon used to like go from? This is gonna totally miss you. Charmander to like Charmeleon, and then it would be Charizard. You know, Ant is Charmander, and Michael Porter Jr. is Charmeleon, and then you go up, and Charizard is Russell Westbrook.
A lot of smart people love Michael Porter Jr. and have loved him ever since he got drafted, saying when Denver took him 14th overall, it was a steal. And that is actually panning out. So that's and I've said in the past that certainly one of my personnel weaknesses is judging the arc of young players.
Oh, me too. I suck at it.
It's already happened. Well,
we were both wrong about LaVine.
But the point I'm making, I don't think I'm wrong about LaVine. I mean,
this was before I was doing it for a job or anything. Was like, I don't see how this is ever going to work. And it's come together to some degree.
Some degree, right. Zach LaVine has never played for a 500 team.
Sure. I don't know why I got
to I rest my case. Right. I mean, Zach LaVine is going to have to, shit gold before I salute, I mean, it really is something that and that's not to take away from the fact that he is he's a great guy. He was a fabulous guy in the locker room. Yeah. I'll never forget the time some fan behind the Wolves bench was berating Rubio for something.
Yeah.
And Zach LaVine went after him. I mean, it was just glorious, And so
I don't remember if I was there for that or if I'm just remembering this story from you telling me.
It was just so wonderful. I mean, it was just – he's a cool guy. Yeah. And he is and he works really hard. Mm-hmm. But his defense is perpetually bad.
Well, that's another comp I've made for Edwards.
And actually, I think I like that comp better, only because I think that
at the basket stuff.
And also because the freakish athleticism. Porter's athleticism is a little different for some reason.
Well, it's taller. It's taller athleticism. He's pretty freaky.
Yeah, I guess.
It looks different when it's in a different package. I think a difference between where some of the Zach Ant thing falls apart is what Zach's 26 now. Is that right? Cat's age? And he is still cannot compute defense. And you at least at what Porter's maybe 22, 21, and Ant's 19. We at least can hold out hope. Right. Yeah. I mean, with Zach, that's the bummer of it. I like him. I mean, he has been incredible to watch offensively.
He's fun to watch. Yeah,
and exactly. If you're somebody who watches both sides of the floor, part of your heart just sinks for him. When I'm watching a Bulls game as a neutral observer, right? I don't give a shit who wins the Bulls or the, Pacers. And it's just like, man, that is the problem here. Is the reason he's always played on teams that have been under 500 is because not that he isn't trying. The sad part about LaVine is he's trying on defense. Ant isn't trying.
He's like Al Jefferson. He's like Al Jefferson that way. Yeah. Al Jefferson always was trying on defense too. Some guys just don't get it.
Right. So what's Finch think about this pecking order thing? If me and you are like, well, Cat, and then there's D'Lo, and then there's Ant. Like Finch, I think, is doing something different now. His whole plan right now is developmental, and I think next season will hone in more on things that lead to results. Do you agree with that?
Yes. I think the ballsiest move Finch has made by far is continuing to start Rubio and steadfastly doing that. And also that Tuesday night game that so disgusted you, 8.5 minutes of that game, the last 8.5 minutes of that game, D'Lo was on the bench. Mm-hmm. He had 27 points in the first half.
I know.
And you benched him for almost the entire fourth quarter. This is a guy who, again, if Ryan Saunders had done that, he would have been fired within 24 hours. Right. And so that to me, that was a real signal. And
I'm having trouble with the signal, though, because of the injury stuff. You know what I mean? You know what I mean, though? Do you hear where I'm coming from?
Yes, I think it's a great excuse. Do you see any injury lagging indicators on D'Lo?
No, so then it's like, that's why.
It's a facade.
It's a facade. And that's what I hate about all this, because then it's back to the stealth tanking stuff.
No.
Yes, it is. What is it then?
I think it's keeping Rubio happy so you don't render the team asunder.
With the added benefit of your odds of winning games decreasing. That's what stealth tanking is.
And also perhaps being able to get rid of Rubio in the offseason, which is not inconsiderable. If you can get something for Rubio that isn't just more problems, $17 million worth of problems in return.
I don't know if I believe in the whole idea of bolstering your players' trade stock in irrelevant games down the stretch.
It is the only way they get beneath the salary cap in a meaningful
luxury
way.
Tax. Yeah.
Yeah, luxury tax, sorry. The only way they get beneath the luxury tax and have any flexibility at all to do that.
I think the only way you're doing that is you're trading Rubio to a team with a GM who fetishizes what international Rubio was, and this idea that their team just needs a point guard. They got everything else figured out, and all they need is just to plug in a stopgap high IQ point guard, like Utah was at 3 years ago or four years ago when they traded for Rubio in the first place. That's the tricky part, is I'm having trouble pointing to which team that is. I kind of go to the Pacers is the one when I
do too. In fact, that was the first thing I thought of.
And so,
because then you move Brogdon over, right?
Yeah, which I think would be fine.
Brogdon can play either one.
I think that team's going to go through a whole identity shift this offseason, one way or the other. I think they're due.
You think the Sabonis? I actually think the Sabonis Turner thing works better than most people.
I'm kind of with you there too, but it's weird. TJ Warren's going to be coming back.
That's the guy you might want to get rid of.
I just think they got to. There's going to be some shaking on there, but there's not a lot of teams for Rubio, and I think it's going to be a team like that where their GM's like abiding thought of Rubio, their own internal motivations, I think that is going to inform a team being willing to trade for Rubio much more than anything that happens in the final 25 games of the season. Rubio pre-trade deadline showed he isn't washed. Like that was, he did his Luol thing. You know, he looked washed at the beginning of the season, and he proved, you know, the first 20 games of the season looked washed. It looked like Rubio might need to retire. He took the next 20 games to be like, all right, that was COVID. I was out of shape at the beginning of the year. Here's me in shape. Like, this is what you get when you get Ricky Rubio in your
plus, on the other hand, he does need to hit shots. Otherwise, he's going to torpedo his value with these more minutes.
Right.
He's back to not shooting well.
Yeah, it's the Rubio experience, man. It's up and down, and it ends up around 34%. Like, that's just what it is.
Another guy, you know, it's funny you hang around teams and cover them long enough. I like Zach LaVine as a human being wonderfully. There's parts of his game I just don't want on my team, you know. Rubio, very similar. I mean, Ricky Rubio is as classic a human being as you can find. He really has honestly evolved. He could have been a prima donna so easily, being feted as one of the greatest players of his country before he left his teens. And he really takes hard looks at what is real about life and what is a figment of his imagination about life. And I think that has extended his career. But at the end of the day, he still can't shoot. And and that's not great.
Which limits the amount of teams that are out there that would even, you know, go get him in the first
place. But the getting back to, why do you think, so you think it's totally a telstank thing. It's telthy stinky.
I don't know what it is, and it doesn't make sense to me.
I think they want, that Finch likes Rubio.
Everything that hasn't made sense for me this year, with a month of hindsight, and I've looked back on it, I go, oh yeah, that was tanking. That's happened every time with every injury and everything. Like, I mean, I don't know. Like, prove me wrong the other way. This doesn't make sense. This doesn't make sense. Your goal, if you're actually trying to win these games down the stretch, and you're trying to do what we all hear them saying they're going to do, put together meaningful tape where you have your core players playing together. Like, this doesn't make sense that less than half of Cat's minutes have D'Lo on the floor alongside him. Like, what is that? That's either a bad idea, bad coaching, or tanking. I don't know what else it is.
Their argument is that they want a classic great scorer who can organize an offense.
No,
D'Lo has done really good things with
the second. They feed this stuff. This is propaganda.
Perhaps. I don't know. What is ironic about this stealth tanking, I just wanted to say it to prove I could say it. What is ironic about this, they have upcoming games against Orlando and Detroit.
And Houston.
Well, I'm assuming they beat Houston.
Yeah, Houston sucks.
Houston, you know.
Did you watch the Rockets Jazz game?
No.
It was the only reason I asked.
Did not need to. Oh, that's right, because they played just before. You can always get the last game.
Oh, my God.
The Rockets Jazz game, I thought, would teach me nothing.
You were right. You were right. I mean, oh, my God.
Okay, but so Oklahoma City is the most tanking team right now.
Right.
They've lost 10 in a row. Your guy, Pokey, is in trouble.
13 in a row. They've lost 13 in a row.
They're 13 in a row. So you have that. You have Orlando, Detroit, and the team Houston.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got four teams that are going to work hard to submerge themselves.
Yep.
And they got 12 games to go, which is not
11.
A lot of games.
11.
11, okay. And Orlando's got 20 wins, right? So they're three.
Let me just read them. Let me read them right now. So okay. Sunday at 4:15 p.m. Houston has 15 wins. Minnesota has 17 wins. Detroit has 18 wins. Orlando has 18 wins. Oklahoma City has 20 wins. Cleveland still thinks they have 21, but they still think they're in the playoff hunt. So
yeah,
it's those five.
That's good.
It's those five.
All right. And so I think of those teams, it's going to be very – obviously Houston is in the driver's seat when it comes to tanking. Oklahoma City is working extremely hard, and I think they will get to the second worst record.
I mean, dude, there's just not a lot of time.
I think that the two or three games – look, when you have these games where two teams play each other, the Wolves play Orlando, the Wolves play Detroit.
Those are two wins that the Thunder aren't getting.
Exactly right. Exactly right. That's fair. And so you have those kinds of situations – I think the Wolves will wind up with the fourth worst record, and that will be.
I'm fine with that.
Does that take them from 41 to 29 or something?
No.
Fifth then.
No. Top three are all 40.1. The fourth one is 36.6. I'm not losing any sleep over 3.5%
sleep. 36.6 are the top three picks?
Yes.
Or all top four picks?
Top three. All right. Yes.
All right.
Nobody seems to like understand this. And then if it falls to fifth.
I'm glad we're talking about it.
I've made it a point. I'm tweeting it out after every game. Because I think what people's understanding is, and right, if you're not familiar with the lottery, less so than you are, where they go, if you fall out of the top three records, you can't get the top three. Well, that's not how the draft works in the NBA.
Right,
but people
Right.
People do think that. I get messages often. And so it goes 40.1 for the worst record, 40.1 for the second worst record, 40.1 for the third worst record, 36.6 for the fourth worst record, nominal difference. And then at five, it drops to 31.5. So you want to stay away from five. Fourth, I'm not.
Even five, though. You know, the difference is four out of 10 versus one out of three, you know?
Yeah.
Which is close to four out of 12.
Yeah. It's a.
At the end of the day.
8.6% difference. That is worth playing the second half of your season and trying to find some sort of identity in a, you know.
Right.
They already did their tanking at the beginning of the year. They did their tanking at the beginning of the year. We knew that at the time. That was the stealth tanking. They did that. That is a fact. We know that. They sucked intentionally after Cat got hurt. And so just play out the rest of the season. And then at the very end, if you want to get weird on one of those Houston games or Detroit games or shut someone down for the last three of the season, like I'm not going to fault you there. That is the incentive structure the league has put in place. You want to do that. But I have a problem with slowly and stealthily tanking over the course of 20, 25 games and lying about it.
Let me play devil's advocate to your argument. Now I might have forgotten what I was going to say. Yeah. Too bad.
Well, the God wins.
It'll come to me. Let's move along.
Jazz. Let's talk about the Jazz, just as a team.
All right.
As
all
right. We'll wind down with just like the league here. And right. And this sounds stupid now because, you know, the Wolves beat the Jazz, but I've been watching them recently and I get like last night notwithstanding, I get this like Miami vibes from last year where not saying they can win the championship, but like that they could just in one series, similar to how Miami just worked Milwaukee,
right.
Just had an answer for it. Like I can see like Utah versus the Clippers. I could see the Jazz winning that in five games, sweeping it. Like I could just where just they have the perfect fit, the perfect execution, the precision to, you know, to beat some of these teams. Now the issue is for the Jazz to win the championship, you don't just got to beat the Clippers. You got to beat three.
Right.
You got to beat three stud teams. One of, you know, the Lakers, the Clippers, and then Brooklyn in the championship to win it. So they don't have three bullets in them like that. But
well,
I think they might have one.
So much of it is what I've always loved about the NBA versus baseball, hockey.
By the way, did you switch your fantasy baseball lineup when we took our
break?
Yes,
I did.
Okay, good.
Yep, you bet. Hockey, all those other sports, the playoffs are really a proving ground.
Yeah.
And they are a place where you need to immerse yourself in the playoffs and then return and immerse yourself. And so that's what hurts Phoenix and to some extent Utah this year. Utah has had a couple of seasons where they've gone second round, you know, but they have not really had a season like Denver had last year where they went to the conference finals, you know.
Yeah, their version of that was with Ricky.
Yeah, it was. And it was second round.
Yeah, it was second
round. It wasn't, you know, and then they ran into James Harden, mm-hmm. you know. And so you do have a situation where I think to the extent that you still have a team with Kawhi on it and you have a team with LeBron on it, those are big factors in the playoffs. So now that Davis has got a ring, I still see the Lakers as the team to beat. I also think Phoenix has got problems, despite the fact that Chris Paul has a ton of experience.
Mm-hmm.
I love Phoenix, and I love Denver, and I love Utah as intruders into the process. I think certainly Denver without Murray is an intruder. And it will be Jokic will become Kawhi territory, just commonly regarded as one of the top three guys in the game for a while, if he manages to get even to the finals without Murray.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not giving them that. I'm not expecting that. Like if I'm not expecting it either. If I'm going through likelihoods of advancing from the West into the championship, I'm going Lakers one. And then I think this is where we're going to disagree. I'm going Jazz two.
Uh-huh.
And then I think I'm going to go Clippers three and then Suns four.
See, I'm going Phoenix two.
Hmm. So we're kind of both in the like.
I just have a vibe about them. I have a vibe about Phoenix that.
I mean, and I love them too. I'd love to. I'll be cheering.
Jay
for him.
Crowder, and I will tell you that Booker strikes me as he's a Murray in waiting. There's a guy, you know, we talked about D'Lo and Murray. Booker is the guy
that is
going to go nuts in the playoffs.
For sure.
And if he doesn't, I will be shocked. I think Booker is going to get you like 37 points a game.
One of my favorite things is watching him play defense this year now.
Yeah.
The shit. I mean, because it looked like.
Some of that is Chris Paul and some of that is Monty Williams.
It's. Credit to him. I mean, credit to him.
And Jay Crowder.
Yep.
Jay Crowder is so important on that team.
But Devin Booker is the example of Ant figuring it out defensively and committing to it.
Oh, that's good. That's a good.
It is. I mean, that's what Booker. Remember when the The Booker.
Yeah, we
was
asked
scoring
of
70.
The three, D'Lo, Cat, and Booker, which was the best of the three on defense. Mm-hmm. And I think I had them Cat, Booker, D'Lo.
Yeah. And I think that's proven think to be that, true because Cat and Booker have taken a big step up.
Yeah, that's right.
D'Lo's at the same spot.
Yeah, I actually think that Booker may have taken a bigger step than Cat, but then again, Cat plays center. you got Jay Crowder and Chris Paul on the floor with you all of a sudden. Imagine Cat with those two guys on the floor with him on defense.
You're going to disagree with this. But everybody's got to like get off of this Jake. Like Jay Crowder is not the best player in the NBA.
Where was he last year?
I know. That's what everybody says. And they say the reason Miami sucks this year is Jake. Maybe
no,
I'm
I
wrong.
Don't say that's the reason. I am saying that they miss him. Yeah. And Phoenix does not miss him.
I guess
Phoenix
just hear,
loves him.
I hear all the time whenever I'm reading or listening about Miami, they need their Jay Crowder. They need their Jay Crowder. And I'm like, I watched Jay Crowder play. And I'm like, this guy's good, but he's Jay Crowder. Like, I don't know.
Yes.
He's a bit
but
much a role player.
What he does, you know, but what's really cool about what you said 40 minutes ago is they need – every team needs a guy who tags somebody with a force.
That's fair.
And also goes and takes the body. If somebody's out dribbling 16 feet, thinking about a step back or a drive in which they will do, suddenly they don't have any options other than getting rid of the ball because somebody is in their jockstrap. That's Jay Crowder.
I agree with that.
That's what, you know, and that is so valuable when you're playing games where Jay Crowder is not necessarily your wing stopper, but he is a guy that when your wing stopper is flagging or in foul trouble, you throw him in as the backup wing stopper, and he's remarkably better than anybody else you have on the team.
That's well
it's
put.
It's that kind of stealth thing that is really good value, and it's one of the reasons Phoenix is really playing so well, in my opinion. I mean, Chris Paul being the top of the list, I would argue the emergence of Booker, which everybody saw last year in the bubble anyway, not so much of a surprise, but important. And then Jay Crowder and Monty Williams, I would tie for third on that.
So,
and Ayton, I think.
Yeah, and I'd like, I think Ayton deserves some credit.
He does.
So your order,
he's fall prone.
Your order, you convinced me to change my order. My order of likelihood to advance to the finals is Lakers 1, Jazz 2, Suns 3, Clippers 4.
And I'm going I'm going to flip the Jazz and the Clippers.
Yeah.
Because I just think, you know, I came out and said that the Lou Williams for Rajon Rondo deal was a bad deal for the Clippers. And everybody goes, well, wait for the playoffs. And some guys.
It was certainly a good deal for the Hawks.
Well, I think so.
But they could both happen. Like if Rondo ends up being good for the Clippers in the playoffs, then it's a mutually beneficial trade.
And Rondo has actually been good in the regular season. But here's the thing that we are trapped by our biases sometimes. Mm-hmm. You know, like Zach LaVine is going to be a really good player before I will say he's a really good player. I'm trapped in my bias, you know, and that's all there is to it. I wish it were different. But you can only be honest, you know, you can only be what you think you see, and some biases hold you back. I am biased against guys like Boris Diaw or whoever, who just work themselves off bad situations saying, I'm not gonna try. James Harden did that in Houston most recently. Mm-hmm. But, you know, Boris Diaw did it, I think, twice. And Rajon Rondo is the perfect candidate for that. If Rondo is ultimately motivated, you know, I said they lost the deal, but people are right. You may see 22 more games of magic out of Rondo before he fades into the sunset. And if that happens, you know, that could be another ring. And Rondo has got this, what I always remember about Rondo is, he was arguably the best player on a team that had the big three and won it all, and they were trying to trade him that offseason. I mean, that says something about Rondo is very, very strange in a locker room. And I don't know what it is. I've never heard anything about it.
And part of it is attractive, though. I think part of the strangeness, like, I mean,
could be
that they traded for Rajon Rondo is definitely right. Paul George and Kawhi Leonard and probably Ty Lue, I'm assuming, in Lawrence Frank,
and,
right?
And the guy with $1 billion, right?
Yeah, well, sure. Convincing Lawrence Frank to make that move because I think, like, that's a classic one, you know, in, like, NBA Twitter or NBA salary cap geek draft world, which I'm not absolving myself from. You know, that trade makes no sense. Like, what? They got two – the Hawks got 2 seconds – and they got Lou Williams, you know, from that. It's, but yeah, it's a playoffs move versus, I don't know.
And if you have a tandem that you can sort in and out of, like the Lakers did, the Lakers used the little bald dude that runs around Caruso. Like crazy.
You never know his
name. Caruso. Caruso and Rondo, they flip back and forth. It was a great change of pace. Beverly and Rondo can be the same thing. They can play both of those guys like 18 to 25 minutes apiece.
Right.
And it will be a totally different look. Rondo is not the physical defender Beverly is, but he's crafty. And so on the one hand, you got a point guard worrying about getting bodied or getting, you know, screwed with. And then you get another guy you worried about picking your pocket or doing something squirrely, you know, especially if it's a guy like Dennis Schroeder, you know, it'll drive Dennis Schroeder mad if he's got to deal with both Beverly.
Wait, so
and
are
Rondo.
You Clippers 2 or are you Clippers 3?
What do you mean?
Lakers 1.
Oh, Clippers. I'm Clippers 3 because I love the Suns.
Yeah, okay.
You know, who knows how it'll all work out? Yeah. I mean, I don't know.
Right. No.
And I think about this in terms of odds. Luka will go absolutely, you know, now Chris Stapps getting hurt, I think really hurts. If he's not around for the playoffs, that'll be a problem. Hmm. But Dallas is a wild card. And there's all kinds of weird things like that can happen.
I'm not feeling like there's anything too wild that I'm concerned about of the bottom of the – like, I know, like, I mean, respect to Portland, respect to Dame in Portland, respect to Luka in Dallas, respect to Jokic in Denver, but.
Well, Jokic is the one.
I put them.
Since Murray has gone down, I'm starting to belatedly join the chorus. I mean, he's certainly in with Embiid. And again, I'm holding hard on Chris Paul. But I do think Embiid, Jokic, and I don't see, I mean, again, Gobert has just sick off on numbers and net ratings. I mean, it's just, do you know that Utah gets outscored when Gobert goes to the bench and when he's on the floor, they outscore opponents by nearly 600 points? I mean, that's just nuts. That's nuts.
Well, Favors is also, like, I mean, how about Kat just roasting Favors last night?
Oh, I know. Favors did look awful.
I mean, you
can't.
That
new hairstyle, I couldn't recognize him at first. But
yep.
When did he become like a cornrows guy or whatever it was he had?
He's got twists or whatever.
I mean,
you haven't been watching him. You haven't been watching the Jazz, Britt.
I haven't been watching the Jazz.
So here's my last thing on it, though. What I think is we both put the Lakers up there.
Yes,
as,
the Lakers, you have to.
As one.
AD and LeBron.
But what's the percentage chance that the Lakers advance out? Is it over 50?
I'd say about, no.
See, that's what's
There's
cool.
There's too many good teams.
That's what.
Too many
that's
good
awesome.
Teams.
That's an awesome part about it.
I think that's always true, though. Mm. I don't. What are the chances? You know, I'd say there's about an 85% chance that it is either Brooklyn or Philly.
Yeah.
But I also say...
No, Milwaukee. I wouldn't agree with that. I'm Milwaukee's in it for me, in the conversation.
Ooh, okay, so there you go. Yeah. All right, so you don't have anybody over 50 in the East either, then, probably.
No, I got Brooklyn over 50.
Well, that's why Milwaukee's in the conversation for you, then.
Yeah, that's true. I just think... Yeah, I think, like, the Lakers are the favorite out of there, but it is just maybe kind of unprecedented for a team to win the West after their two best players missed the whole, like, last, 2 months of the season? Or, you know, the majority?
What did we think going into the season?
I mean, you
what
know me. I, yeah. I,
no, but going into the season, here's what I thought anyway. It had like an absurd 3-month turnaround, a 3-month offseason. You got LeBron, who's like 30, yeah. 37.
See, I need to like remind myself of this stuff all the time. Like, there's and too so much
LeBron
stuff.
And, LeBron and AD, rest those dudes. You'll be fine.
Yeah, no, just, you're right.
It turned out that you needed to get injured to rest them, but they still now will be rested. And there's going to be – they have – once the regular season ends, they have 6 weeks of incredibly intense basketball to play. And, you know, that's going to be, you know, if they're lucky, you know, if they manage to. Do you know that the Clippers had almost exactly the same situation last season with George and Kawhi, that they very rarely played together?
Right.
And that could arguably be seen as a reason why, you know, they didn't do as well.
Well, there's been a lot of teams the Wolves are obviously the most grotesque of it with how little Cat and D'Lo have played together. But I was just watching the Celtics Hornets game this afternoon, and
how'd that go?
My Hornets won. I'm getting back.
Did they?
I'm re-getting on the Hornets.
Celts. Oh no!
Yes,
I love the Celts. The Celts had themselves the home court advantage for a while there, and now they're back. Too bad.
And that was Hornets without LaMelo, without Hayward, and without Monk.
Yeah,
they look good. I'm back. I'm back on. I'm re-engaged. But what I was going to say is the Celtics.
I hope they play the Hawks. It won't happen unless
they might win. Then
both of them have like incredible. I think they could be a play-in series, right?
Or it could be the 4-5.
It could.
I mean, the Knicks. The 4-5 is like. The 4-5 is going.
The Celtics get bumped down. Seriously. That would be funny.
I mean, there's time left for it to happen. What was I going to say? Oh no, the Celtics though. The Celtics have only had 18 games this season where Tatum, Brown, Smart, and Walker have all played together.
Yeah.
You know,
doesn't count for me.
Yeah, I guess, but
Tatum, Brown, and Smart. Marcus Smart being out for a long time, I think, kind of screwed with him. And also, I really hope my guy Jaylen Brown did not peak too soon. I mean, he just was phenomenal early. He's kind of plateaued a little bit lately. Part of that is,
I mean, he was like 70% true shooting, like legit 70%.
And also, but Tatum is using up all the star air in that room right now. I mean, his usage is way up. And it may be. I mean, let's face it. He's earning every possession he takes, but. Mm-hmm. I worry about the Celtics' beautiful blend. That's what made the two series that I just cherished last year were Raptors-Celtics and then Heat-Celtics. Raptors-Celtics and Heat-Celtics were almost as close as you get to starless basketball at that level. You know, there wasn't a superstar on any of those three teams.
I want the Raptors to get in through the play-in somehow. Like, that team doesn't suck.
I know. But they do have problems. Siakam is not a good
but
player
just, like,
all of a sudden.
Just names of, like, these are all guys. You and I, they're right in our strike zone. The Siakams, Van Vliet, Lowry, Gary Trent Jr.
Right.
Who else are we missing? Oh, OG Anunoby. Like, I don't want to play those five guys. Chris Boucher, you know?
Right, Chris Boucher.
He's
going to do
Baines will beat the shit out of somebody in the playoffs. Like,
Chris Boucher will do something incredibly stupid in the playoffs
for
and cost them a game.
And we're forgetting other guys. Like, they're playing, I mean, they've just been so, and they're playing in Tampa Bay. That team has
and
better
Lowry,
players.
It's a swan song. I don't know how Lowry will react. Either Lowry will mail it in, getting ready for the next contender he plays for, or he'll try to go out with a bang. And that'll make a huge difference. Well, that'll make a huge difference in
if they're in the series. Raptors Bucks in the 2-7 or something.
Kyle Lowry is a poor man's Chris Paul. And that is a compliment.
That is.
You know, he is somebody who, when you do not think you have a chance, suddenly you have a chance because Kyle Lowry is fucking with you. Uh-huh.
I want a point guard like that.
Yeah.
All right, Britt. You wrote that. I'm going to pull up the title of your article here. It was really well done. The Timberwolves under Chris Finch, where things stand under Minnesota's latest coach. It's a which we didn't really dig into, but I think is kind of the most fascinating part of it. I'm not saying your writing was the best thing ever. The most fascinating idea of it was this whole balance of power shift that is happening in relation to Rosas. And I thought you got into that in detail, and it will be how that kind of resolves itself will be that will define a lot of what this next chapter of Timberwolves basketball looks like entering this offseason and then entering, you know, next season when it's kind of go time for this Wolves team. Like, they got to go.
And I still think, and it's been a through line with my writing about the Wolves all season, everything goes through Rosas in terms of you have to figure out how Rosas is in the mix of this in order to really figure out what's going on. Because the dude...
I like the idea I stumbled over in the middle of this, where he felt like Tibbs, where he was the coach and president.
Yeah, no. I
hadn't really thought about it like that before, but I feel like that was right, and he doesn't feel like that anymore.
Yeah, exactly. And that will be a good thing. That is definitely a good thing because the players know better, you know? Mm-hmm. And so, yeah. But I appreciate the it'll be interesting to see if I write any more about the Wolves for the Athletic, you know, the rest of the season. Because I don't know, you know?
Well, can I still count on you coming on this once a week for some playoff stuff?
Why not?
No, I'm not talking like post. I think we don't got to go 90 minutes on every one of the playoffs things.
But. I don't mind. No, there's nothing wrong with it. No, what I'm saying is I think that they have begun to think that the team is
irrelevant.
You know, whoever is making the decisions looks at the standings and goes, why do we want to devote another writer besides John Krasinski to this? You know, and I think that's one of the things that I have to accept something that, you know,
I would just point out to the notion that like, that isn't the right analytic to use by them, because the fact of the matter is somebody who my job is determined by numbers. There is a great hunger for Timberwolves content, regardless of what their record is. That's just a fact. And it's the coolest thing. It's the coolest thing about the fan base, man.
Yeah. The fan base is, you know, I've had a long-term relationship with the fan base. And if the longer you've been a Timberwolves fan, the ways that you adjust to it, you know, the people who were really, really awful cynics a decade ago basically corroded themselves into oblivion. You know, they basically cannot deal with this. The people who have tried to season in, looked at the team with realism, which involves a healthy dose of cynicism, but also look at the team as, the NBA is a league that is constantly changing. I mean, the churn of player movement and consequential happenings is incredible.
Right.
And
shitty
so,
teams become relevant on a turn of the dime, you know, like relevant in like a being good way, but just relevant. Like,
well, and even just this whole idea that this team had Butler and Tibbs and it went to the playoffs, and now Butler and Tibbs are proving themselves to be these phenomenal people aside from the Wolves, is that a cost of cynicism? Sure, but it's also
it's a fascinating
sign. Yeah. A sign, I mean, there's so many things that could be going on, and Chris Finch, I think is. Certainly for the Timberwolves, I think he has the possibility to be the best coach since Rick Adelman, who didn't make the playoffs his 3 years on the job, but did show a competence from the sidelines that was heartening. And he had some bad luck, and then his wife got ill, and he voluntarily retired because he was pretty checked out the last half season he was here. But
well, that's high praise.
Was definitely, I agree. I like Chris Finch a lot. I think that you know, we'll see how it goes because.
Well, the interesting part is we're going to have to like integrate eye test with numbers, with understanding right. personalities into the assessment of Chris Finch. Because if you just, again, like we talked about, if you just use numbers, like differences that Chris Finch is making are not going to be apparent. But if you, but if you're not, if you're watching the game, you can tell there are clearly differences, you know, forming.
Well, first of all, are they more fun to watch?
Yeah, easy.
By far. And why is that? Because you see players in positions to do cool things.
And because Cat's playing.
It definitely couldn't agree more, but Anthony Edwards is not nearly as clueless on offense as he was at the beginning of the season. Jaden McDaniels is being allowed to blossom now. That's not Ryan's fault, but it is a manifestation of Finch being hired.
Sure.
There are a variety of things you could say. And D'Lo is a different player. Let's face it. D'Lo did not enjoy the Ryan Saunders experience. That was very, very obvious. And we didn't even talk about this, and we won't because we're running out of time. But D'Lo being okay with all the things that are going on right now, and him being a sixth man after all the trials and tribulations, and he's finally back with healthy with Cat.
Diplomatic D'Lo.
Diplomatic D'Lo. So that's another definitely something to watch for.
Well, we'll be back and we'll talk next week more about, yeah, he is the variable, man, that I don't have my head wrapped around is D'Angelo Russell.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, without a doubt. He is, if D'Lo can be even close to a two-way player and also be somebody who can get you points in bunches,
right,
but know when not to try to do that, then that'll really help.
No, he's like that, you know, like that, those people in the park where they like, they have you pick a card and then they slide the cards around. They're like, follow the queen, right, follow the queen. And, you know, they're sliding them all around and you like right. have to, if you pick it up, you win 10 bucks or whatever.
Right.
That's the D'Lo experience. And we just got to pick up, you know, you got to pick up the right
there
card.
There you go.
All right. He's Britt Robson.
An analogy to finish
off. We're never short of analogies. Britt Robson, at Britt Robson on Twitter. I'm Dade Moore, at Dade Moore NBA. I'll be back to talk after the next Jazz game on Monday night. I don't even want to go in to speculate whether or not if they win or lose that game. I would assume the Jazz win it, but, you know, we will see. Thanks for doing it, Britt, and I will talk to y'all Monday night. Peace out. How I'm feeling, man, I hope it never stop, yeah. Green and hot so you can find me in the crowd, yeah, yeah. Don't let standards ever bring you down, yeah.